is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
1 hour to go here on the Tom, Jake, and Stacy show, and we were just talking in the break there about Pete Carroll and whether or not this is his best coaching job. And guys, I'm looking in front of me at the last decade's worth of win-loss records for the Seahawks. Since he got here, 2-7-9 seasons, but we had the playoff appearance there, winning a playoff game, by the way. After that, 11-5, 13-3, 12-4, two Super Bowls in there, 10-6, 10-5-1, 9-7, 10-6, 11-5 this year. We don't know where the season's going to end yet. To the win or lose this Sunday, is this his best coaching job?
Man, that is so hard because there are a couple years in my mind that really stand out. I think 2014, the ability, 2015, the ability to keep that team together after that Super Bowl loss, I thought was a really good job by him, keeping that team together for the most part. I would say last year even was a tremendous job. I think that they were in a really bad spot in terms of retooling their talent and all that to be able to get them to the playoffs. But this year, in terms of what they've had to overcome and all the close games that they have played and the fact that they've won so many games on the road, I mean, I would definitely not argue that point. I think that it is a season, to me, it is a top three season, and I think that it is very much fine with saying that it is his best year in coaching in for the Seattle Seahawks with all of that, going through. They don't have the running game at this point that they've wanted. They don't have the defense that he is accustomed to having, and still being able to win regardless of all that, to me, is huge.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at their most successful season. So let's say 2013, 14, and throw 15 in there.
Yeah, because of what happened at the end of the season when they just went off.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to look at those years and say their roster, especially on defense, was stacked and there's not a lot of coaching that goes into it. But then that also ignores a lot of aspects of coaching that go into coaching a really good team, which is, like Jake said, bouncing back from that Super Bowl hangover. You saw the Rams this year getting to the Super Bowl. Obviously, they lost that one. Coming back, they didn't even make it to the playoffs. And that is not uncommon. The Carolina Panthers also did that the year after their Super Bowl win. There's a lot that goes into coaching big personalities, competing personalities in the locker room. That was a great coaching job, regardless of the sheer amount of talent he had around him. You still curated all of that talent, all of those personalities into a winning locker room. I think when you look at this team, there's less talent, so there's a different kind of coaching approach to take. It's not just curating big personalities. It's getting guys fired up. It's giving guys confidence. It's making sure that rookies learn lessons, since you're depending on so many of them. Those are so many different aspects of coaching that one coach can demonstrate that so well this year and work with a completely different group and a completely different set of, I guess, coaching goals with a more talented team.
You know what's
surprising?
You know what? When they give away Coach of the Year awards, usually it's the guy that does the most with the least. You talked about talent right there, Stacy. It's the, you know, if Pete Carroll goes 11-5 with a team that has less talent and goes deeper into the playoffs than when, say, 2015 when he had more talent, that would be pretty impressive. But I wonder if you were to ask Pete Carroll, which team was easier to coach, 2019 or 2015? I think he would say 2019. I think dealing with those veterans after a while. Now, Pete Carroll may be impervious to all that stuff, but the veterans that were here at the very, very end dragging this thing down, that would be a very difficult thing to be around if you're a head coach. I would bet that being around this group is a lot easier than being around that group in like 2015 and 16.
I will say he's a really fired up guy, though. I think people, because him and Russell Wilson have similar approaches and their mentality during the game, they're pretty even keeled. We compare them a ton. But Pete Carroll is fiery. I think the fieriness of those early teams, he did really like and respond to. And I think that's a big part of his personality, too.
He did, and he was able to handle those. But I would agree with Tom in the sense that 2015 was extremely hard. There were emotional things that you had to deal with the individual players. You had to try and mend relationships. There were all these things going on behind the scenes.
With all the expectations that the team had coming off that Super Bowl. I mean, he had that burden, his own personal burden of that final play in the Super Bowl. If he only had that to deal with and not all the other players, that would have been hard enough.
But it was a chain reaction of all of it, right? It was a chain reaction to all that. So he had an extremely difficult situation to deal with. And Pete Carroll is unique in the terms of his approach, his fiery mentality, all that, to be able to make it all work. I think there's very few people that could have made that happen. And Pete Carroll did, but in 2019, in the sense that it's easier for him this year, it's easier to get buy-in. It's easier to be able to tell a bunch of young guys that, hey, it's okay to win close games, and it's about selling belief and establishing a culture. And when your veteran leadership, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Dwayne Brown, when you have that leadership that is echoing everything that you're saying, it makes it so much easier. And KJ had said to the media that there's no drama. There's no drama on this team. There's no extra side things going on, and that makes it a more cohesive team. It makes it easier, and I think that that's a huge reason why, guys, that this team has been able to do so well on the road, that they've been able to kind of have this culture and this mentality and come together. And you know, these young guys, they just don't know any different. And so for Pete Carroll to sell that culture and to have the veteran leadership be bought in the way that they are, I think that this is a tremendous job that Pete Carroll has done. And traditionally, I also go back to, like, you look at the sense of what has his defense always been. They've always had a great group that has been able to get after the quarterback and just rush with their four guys on the defensive line and be able to play coverage behind it. Well, they don't really have that this year. And so instead of going and playing cover three and cover one every down that we've been accustomed to, they've started to play more two high safeties. And that has led to them being able to generate more turnovers.
You were merging takeaways and turnovers.
Exactly.
There.
It was just a nice little medley right there. But
mashup.
He's been able to do that. So I think this has definitely been a great job coaching in getting this team to where it's at, you know, for Pete Carroll.
I also think, Tom, you mentioned that Coach of the Year is the guy that does the most with the least.
I'm talking about in other sports, that's what happens. I'm thinking
Got
about
it.
Baseball.
And
not
in the NFL,
always in
I
the
think
NFL.
You would, I think you would agree with me that in the NFL, it feels like it goes to the guy who has the quickest turnaround. If
yeah.
you're a new coach. The new
sure.
coach that comes in and gets his team the farthest. So this year, Kyle Shanahan and Harbaugh would be probably top picks, right? I mean, I know the Ravens were still good last year.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
they've
Buffalo
gone so
might
far.
Be in there too, Sean
right,
McDermott.
But the team that takes the biggest change with a relatively new coach.
Yeah.
And I think what that award sometimes does, it's the same way we talk about MVP or Executive of the Year, is it sometimes fails to recognize the subtleties of coaching. And I think that's why I do wonder if 2019 is maybe his best year, because it's made me, as a member of the media, someone on the outside, look at the way that coaches can adapt the way they approach different teams and somehow remain really consistent with their message. And that's really hard to do. And I think you have to give him credit for, A, him and John Schneider, credit for this organization never feeling like it took a significant step back, despite being in what I would still say is a little bit of a turnover. And B, with guiding them to success with much of the same principles he's always had, but finding ways to communicate those to very different groups.
Yeah, there's four coaches in this league that I can see here who have done that have not taken a step back despite long tenures. One is Pete Carroll. One's obviously Bill Belichick. John Harbaugh's another. Tomlin has had a couple of rough years. I mean, if you call an 8-8 a rough year, he hasn't gone 4-12. Sean Payton's had some bad. He had 3 7-9s in a row. So I'm actually not going to give him credit for that. Andy Reid's been kind of up and down, but Pete Carroll, in a year, I'm talking about last year. See, last year we could have had the same discussion, And actually, I think that we did when it was Bob Gross and Tom.
Absolutely.
But we didn't expect them coming out of training camp to be 10-6 to even get to the playoffs. So if you had asked this last year, the only difference between last year and this year, if they win this game on Sunday, they're in the NFC Championship.
With injuries they didn't have last
year.
Right,
with I won't say no running game.
No, you have a completely depleted running
game. Right, it's like a... I don't know. What would you call this running back room right now?
Depleted.
Depleted?
Very depleted.
Very
absolutely.
Depleted.
I mean, the only reason why we're.
I wanted to say, with all due respect to Marshawn.
That's exactly my point.
It's not a knock on him. It's a knock on the people that you'd stuck with all year who knew your system, who you knew, who were playing really well.
Right. It's Marshawn Lynch, but he's still a guy who's coming back from a 14-month hiatus. I mean, that, to me, is a depleted running back group, if I've ever heard one, and you're counting on him to step up for you. I mean, it's Marshawn Lynch, and you're not going to count him out in any sense, but it's definitely something that it was a drastic decision.
Right now, we're in four-down territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Who's the one defender for the Packers that the Seahawks offense needs to worry about?
To me, it's very clear that there's really one guy that you have to worry about, and that is outside linebacker Za'Darius Smith. Preston Smith, the other linebacker, he's great at getting to the passer, but it really starts with Za'Darius Smith. And the reason why I say that is because he's a guy that they use to be their playmaking piece to their defense. He's the guy that brings the energy, the fire, the juice. He's got a tough, hard-nosed mentality, and you're going to see him talking trash out there on the field if he is, you know, successful getting to the quarterback, getting TFLs, a tackle for losses. He is really kind of the heart and soul of that defense for them, and he's going to be moved all over the defensive line. He will be moved all over the place, and so that is the guy that the Seahawks have to have a plan for in every scenario, because he can be lined up on the edge, he can be lined up over Joey Hunt, he can be lined up over the guards. It doesn't really matter. He is their playmaking piece, and they're going to try and find the best mismatch so that he can try and get to Russell Wilson.
Who is the best mismatch?
I would say right now,
Joey Hunt?
If you're going to look at it, it's either Joey Hunt or the right side of their line with Jermaine Ifedi being able to get to him. If George Fant is in the game, then yeah, they're going to test all sides of that line. Dwayne Brown's back. I think that they more, you know, try to attack the right side of the offensive line.
Second down. Stacey, what Seahawk has quietly had a solid year?
It's not his best year. Well, at least not in a couple categories. In one category it is. But I'm going to say KJ Wright. I talked to KJ Wright in early November about turning 30 in general. It was just an interesting conversation that I thought would be relatable, and I'm publishing that this week. But
yeah, because you can relate to it, because you don't ever stop talking about that topic.
I know. Well, it's interesting to just hear the perspective of someone who is aging in a career where it very much matters, in a world where maybe it doesn't, right? If he's at the grocery store with his family, he's not thinking, I'm old. Oh my gosh, I'm the dinosaur in this room. He's 30 years old. But when you're in an industry where it's all anyone can talk about, what must that be like? And so I talked to him about it, and he didn't feel weird about it at all. He felt great. He felt at his best. But he knew that the outside world, especially the football world, was seeing him a different way, and that he would have to change the way he approached it this year and just really constantly try to prove that he did that. And I think because he was signed on to what was kind of effectively a one-year deal here, it was seen as this, oh, it's a bonus. They're bringing back KJ Wright, and that's great. Again, he hasn't had his best year, but he still had a career high with 132 tackles. We've talked about those tackles in general for the linebackers. He's overall been pretty solid, and I think because he was seen as, oh, it'll be nice to have him back, but he's out of his prime, there's not enough people paying attention to it. But he's been a really nice piece on defense.
Yeah, this isn't like a handshake deal. Hey, just come and hang around, and we'll just, you know, sort of keep you there.
He's
still making an impact.
Team.
I mean, just watch last week's game. Him tackling, who was it he tackled at
Josh
the 5-yard line? Oh, was it McCown himself?
It was McCown.
So I mean, that was an open lane to the end zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, he's been great over the last couple of weeks, deterring teams from running screens. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been a screen killer over the last couple of weeks. So, absolutely. KJ's had a pretty good season for himself.
Third down. Did you have something else to add there?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he did have a career high in interceptions, but I think the bigger impact, what Jake has said, is helping with those screens.
Jake, who's the biggest priority for the Seahawks defense between the two Aarons, Rodgers or Jones?
Everybody is afraid of Aaron Rodgers, and the guy to me who is the number one priority is Aaron Jones. If you allow Aaron Jones to be able to get after it on the ground and to be able to be an impact through the air, that's where Aaron Rodgers is going to be at his best. If you can keep this Seahawks defense off balance and be able to be effective in both the run and the pass, it's going to be a rough game. And so being able to handle Aaron Jones and to control the line of scrimmage is going to be a huge factor, because Matt LaFleur has leaned on Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is the centerpiece of this offense, and Aaron Rodgers has just been an additional piece. It's not the same show that Aaron is used to running. Aaron Rodgers is used to running and it being a wide open offense and having four or five receivers that are elite weapons. So this is a different group, and it starts with Aaron Jones, and I think that that's got to be the priority for the Seattle Seahawks.
Fourth down. With Mike Leach leaving Pullman for Mississippi State, yeah, that happened today too. Who are some candidates to replace him?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, this was kind of a surprise in the sense that there were a lot of other job opportunities that were open that you thought Mike Leach would have went to. But I think, you know, you look at the comparison of where he's been, Texas Tech, Washington State, now he's going to Starkville, Mississippi. I mean, kind of the same, you know, small town type of mentality. I think it's a good fit for him to be able to have a big impact in the SEC. But potentials for replacing him, I think you have to look at Alex Grinch, Oklahoma defensive coordinator. I think Hawaii's head coach Nick Rolovich is one. Jim McElwain is another name that I'm hearing that could make a ton of sense there. And then, you know, I always reference back to he's now Cal Poly's head coach, but Bo Baldwin was a pretty successful guy offensively at Eastern Washington. You need a guy that is going to, he doesn't need to be exactly the same in terms of air raid, but has spread principles on offense, because if they don't go with those spread principles on offense, they're going to struggle mightily because of the way they've recruited. They don't have a single tight end on their roster. I mean, put that into perspective. So that is going to be a big part of it. It's going to be interesting to hear all the names that are being considered for you know, Wazoo's head coaching position.
Do you think that Mike Leach should have held out for the Cleveland Browns job?
He would have been a good follow for Freddie Kitchens. They're kind of two peas in a pod, right?
That would have been awesome.
Oh, man, Cleveland would have lost their minds.
Our insider coverage of the Seahawks playoff run brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Right now, what's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
Real quick, a reminder, tomorrow you're going to want to head to 710sports.com/win. Well, you have a chance to submit the best Blue Friday photo for a chance to win a Seahawks Pro Shop gift card. Thanks to our friends at the Seahawks Pro Shop who want to get you ready for the Seahawks playoff matchup this weekend. Again, details and rules for our Blue Friday photo contest at 710sports.com/win. All right, tonight we've got UW at Stanford, 6 o'clock on FS1, and then on our air at 7:30. The Cougs are taking on Cal. Saw the Cougs actually beat UCLA the other night.
The Cougs are winning some games. Kyle Smith, he's playing some nerd ball. Hold on. That's a problem. He was calling his offense data raid to kind of pair with the air raid when
really?
He was at Pullman. So we may need to workshop already its third iteration. It went nerd ball, data raid, and now we're on to number three, I think.
Nerd ball.
Yeah, but it's tough
just
to recruit. Like,
is that his brand?
Is it though? No, I feel like nerds.
You
want to cool
come
now.
Play some nerd ball? We're going to play defense
cool
and rebound.
millions of people love Harry Potter and Game of Thrones. What are we talking about? I'm just saying,
Stacey, you bring up a very fair point.
Thank you,
man. In conference, the Huskies are 1-1, 11-4 overall. They're playing Stanford tonight. Who is? God, are they the? They're not the best team in the conference, are they? Even though they have the best overall record, they need to get their act together going forward here.
UW, yeah, well, yeah.
Because I mean,
it's such a young group, it's such a talented group that I understand why they were preseason favorites by so many. You know, you love Mike Hopkins and what he's been able to do, the recruiting class they had, but it just goes to show, like, they still have to go out there, play games, continue to develop, and I think that's what you've seen with this group. They haven't been automatic. They haven't shown up to every single game and played the same style that they want to. Your star players, you know, hit and miss at times, and so I think that they're, you know, young players trying to grow, trying to find their way throughout this process, and hopefully it doesn't set them back too much with, you know, bad losses. They had the one against UCLA. They really can't afford those if they really want to make it into the tournament and have an impact in the tournament.
You got three teams in the top 25 at the moment. Oregon's at number 9, Arizona 24, Colorado 25. We'll see if it holds that way, but the tournament committee has definitely not been friendly to the Pac-12, and probably deservedly so over the last couple of years. So if Washington wants to get into this thing, they got their work cut out for them going forward. We're going to hear from Bobby Wagner coming up next. It is Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
All right, we're back here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. And Stacey was just talking a minute ago about how KJ Wright goes underappreciated. I think that that's true these days for a lot of linebackers. Let's take a listen to what Bobby Wagner had to say the other day.
Play in 25, 30 degree weather, whatever it's supposed to be Sunday. Does that not seem like as big a deal after playing in the Minneapolis playoff game?
Yeah, it's not a big deal, man. I've never been in a game like that before where you sneeze and before the snot come out your nose, it turns into ice. So as long as it's not that, I think we're going to be good. I saw guys' eyes get watered shut from when the tears kind of came right here. The eyes was watered shut. Cam got frostbite, I thought. So if it's not that, I think we're good.
What was the biggest thing that you learned from that game about playing in extreme cold like that?
Might want to consider some sleeves, maybe. And stay by the warmer as much as you can.
You gonna go sleeves on Sunday?
No sleeves, man.
Aaron Rodgers has been really good at the hard count, faking guys off sides for years. Everyone knows it's coming. Why do you think it still works? You know, everyone knows he's gonna do it.
He's just he finds a way to do it at the right time, the time when you least expect it. You'll look at the clock and see it's down to like 1 second, and you think, okay, there's no way he can hard count, when he still hard counts anyways and draws you outside right at the last second. So, you know, he's a master of the craft. Obviously, he studies the game, and so that's something that we have to be conscious of and understand. You know, with that, making sure we stay on sides, and then this team likes to change personnel and try to catch you running off the field and snapping the ball while you're changing personnel. So we have to make sure that we don't get hurt by those little things, little details that we can be on.
You played it a lot. Can you see when it's coming, the hard counts?
Nah, he's pretty good at it. So, yeah, and I'm off the ball. So even if it gets me, I got enough space to recover. The more so the D-line.
Do you have to be more conscious of disguising your defense because he's so good at dissecting it and figuring it out before the play?
A little bit, but you don't want to get too caught up in disguising to the point where he catches you out of position because you're trying to trick him. At the end of the day, he's been in the game for a long time. You know, it's not too many looks that he hasn't seen. And so you're not necessarily going to, you know, out-trick him majority of the time. You know, you got to execute your defense. And I feel like if you execute your defense, you'll be fine. I think sometimes people get in trouble trying to trick somebody who kind of, you know, seen it all. And so sometimes you got to line up and play football.
Are they more reliant on Jones and the running game right now than previous iterations of this team when you faced them?
I would say the running game, it seems to be a lot stronger than it was, you know, when we played them before. You know, obviously I have a lot of confidence in the running game, you know, but there's still a great quarterback out there. We're not going to, you know, just try to overthink the run game and forget that he can throw the ball and you know, do the things that he's capable of doing. So we got to find a way to make them one-dimensional, and should be a fun matchup.
Do they use Jimmy Graham differently than when he was here? And what will it be like for you, I guess, if you get matched up against him and all that stuff?
Try to hit him 100%. Try to hit him a lot. You know, if he try to box me out, because he thinks he's good at basketball, but he knows I'll beat him. So You know, I think they use him, you know, kind of the same. You know, he's a big guy, so you try to get him up on matchups and things of that nature. You know, when he's kind of closer to the core, you don't really, you know, he's such a good route runner and things like that. You don't really expect him to block too much. So it's kind of like that. It's not too different than what we've seen when he was here, what we've seen when he was with the Saints. Obviously, he's a great receiving tight end, so they're going to find ways to get him the ball and get him in matchups that they feel are in their favor.
How would you describe how the defense came together for those seven sacks on Sunday?
I would say I think we were just really relentless. You know, I felt like we were doing a great job of really going after the ball, because a lot of it, you know, a couple of those sacks were just guys hustling and you know, trying to get him before he escaped. So, you know, we just, you know, our mindset was on it. We were relentless. We knew that it was going to be really big part of our game. And you know, obviously it helped us out a lot, you know, those sacks. And there were some key sacks in really crucial moments.
Similar mindset, I would imagine.
100%. Going to try to chase this guy down.
Cody seemed like he was a lot more comfortable this past week, just making more plays. What did you see out of him from maybe when he first started against the Rams to the game he played this past week?
Yeah, I think as you know, gain that experience, you know, you gain confidence as well. You know, the first couple games is always like trying to figure out, you know, is this game like college? Is it faster? Is it whatever? But once you kind of settle down and realize it's just a game of football, you know, he's starting to get confident. He's really smart. You know, he picked up the defense really, really fast. And so sometimes it's just getting out there, not overthinking, and just making plays. And that's what he did. You know, he did a really good job of in the zone. He had a couple pass breakups, sacks, a couple hits in the run game. And that's what that's all you want to do. You want to make some hits, try to change the game in a positive way, and then build on that each week.
Just has a monster game. That's really going to upset me.
For chaos purposes, I kind of want him to, although
no.
I would obviously love Seattle to still win.
I think I would rather Pete Carroll mismanage the clock.
No,
with
what?
3 minutes to go.
Why?
Then get beat by 100 yard, two touchdown game from Jimmy Graham.
In this scenario, you Seattle would still win. But just for the sake of, I just like chaos and surprises. And
oh, I don't. He can do whatever he wants if Seattle wins. I'm talking about them beating us up there. With a monster day.
I actually agree. No, the biggest weapon on offense is going to be Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
And if he gets going, that is going to be a very hard game for Seattle to win.
It's Aaron Jones and Davante Adams. And the other guy that is kind of a sleeper in terms of a weapon for them is, I want to call him Lazarus, but it's not.
Is it Valdez Scantling?
It's Lazard.
Lazard.
I just call him the Lizard.
I always
call him the Lizard.
I always want to call him Lazarus, but it is not that.
Lazard?
Lazard. Yep. And
Lazard.
Lazard. He's a big, tall dude. He's 6'5", has the ability to, you know, go high point the football. And so those are really the three guys that you're going to be, you know, keeping your eye on. And so it's interesting to hear Bobby Wagner talk about defensively how they're going to approach, that they're not going to try and, you know, mix up their coverages and try and disguise and do all that kind of stuff, because Aaron is such a vet, has seen everything, and with his snap count and with his cadence, he has the ability to get defensive players by just them being out of position by getting too cute. So it's interesting just kind of hearing Bobby talk about this matchup and you know, how they're going to approach this game and the strategy that they're going in with.
Do you guys find Aaron Rodgers to be sullen?
Sullen?
Sullen. Like, generally, like, his disposition is just sort of annoyed or unhappy, kind of down.
Yes. Maybe not all the time. I think that he's someone who shows more emotion when he's upset or something goes wrong than would some other quarterbacks. Like, you don't see Drew Brees display the same kind of emotions on the field that you see from Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Not the same kind of, like, maybe the, oh, I'm bummed about that call. I can't think of a time when I've seen Drew Brees look visibly angry at a teammate.
Oh, that for sure. I can think of times where I've seen him very happy, though. Whereas with Rodgers, when I think of Aaron Rodgers, other than that discount double check thing he used to do, I don't know if he still does it. But I think of him kind of shaking his head after an incompletion.
Yeah, that's the main thing that I see when I think of Aaron Rodgers. That's what visual I get. But also, I think that there's an interesting part of Aaron Rodgers from the standpoint of, I would agree that is who he is, probably about 80% of the time on the field. But, you know, I mean, we've seen him have fun on the sideline as well. I mean, he was at one point he was slapping the base on the sideline.
Where was he slapping the base?
I'll show you a video.
He was slapping the bass?
Yeah, he was slapping big time. Base. So, I mean, he has this, you know, personality to him. He's got a dry personality from the standpoint of his humor. It's definitely a dry, and you have to know Aaron Rodgers to really get it.
All right, you guys, listen up. Tomorrow you're going to want to head to 710sports.com/win where you can submit your best Blue Friday photo, your best one, for a chance to win a Seahawks Pro Shop gift card. Thanks to our friends at the Seahawks Pro Shop who want to get you ready for the Seahawks playoff matchup this weekend. Again, details and rules for our Blue Friday photo contest are at 710sports.com/win.
Coming up next, we sum it up on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
Ah! Russell Wilson says that he still texts Jimmy Graham every single week. Something about that annoys me.
Why?
Only because...
What?
Because he's the enemy? Or why?
Well, because he's the enemy for this week, and fair or unfair, his time here, his legacy here is just... It's shrouded.
But there are different perceptions on that.
I know.
If he talked to the media more...
No, I don't care about that.
With the same play on the field, he would have a different reputation here.
No, I don't care about that at all.
No,
I never requested to talk to him.
I know you don't, but there are other people that do.
That's fine. I'm talking about my opinion. I just feel like his productivity on the field wasn't what it could have been. And that in and of itself doesn't line up with the idea that he and Russell would still be friends.
What?
Well, I think Russell sees it very differently.
Yeah. Of course he does.
From the standpoint that... his last year, I mean, they were, I mean, Jimmy had like 900 yards.
Yeah,
and,
dude.
So, you know, I think Russell still sees Jimmy as a very talented guy. And,
yeah.
I mean, he was in his wedding. I mean, him and Robert Turbin were in his wedding.
Also, the trade is the whole, it's not like Jimmy Graham applied for a job here and took someone else's spot and then just sucked. Like, he was traded here. And it took them a while to figure out how to use him effectively.
Let me ask you this question. If they had Chris Carson during the years where Jimmy Graham was here, do you think he would get less blame? Like, there's this idea that he was sort of distracting the offense, that Russell was trying too hard to target him. If they had had, because they really didn't find a permanent running back the entire time Jimmy Graham was here. If they had Chris Carson, would that situation have evened itself out?
Potentially, but the offensive line was really bad during those years
yeah.
as well. They were really bad.
I don't think that's true. At the end of 2015,
Tom, they were bad.
At the end of 2015,
and 17, they were horrible.
I know that, Jake. I'm saying at the end of 2015, they were very good. Was Jimmy Graham here in 2017?
Yeah.
Yes.
He
yes.
was?
It was his final was his year.
Third year.
That year, he had 10 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the 15 narrative, the offense struggled at the beginning of the year. Jimmy Graham has the best game, ironically, has his best game against Pittsburgh, and he gets hurt. And then the offense goes on a tear, and Russell Wilson starts to play well. And there's the narrative that, the offense started, you know, doing better without Jimmy Graham there. I don't know if that's entirely true because Jimmy just started to find he just had his breakout game, and then he gets hurt. So you don't know what that would have looked like moving forward. But I get it, you know, and I totally understand. And I think that this group here in Seattle really struggled to use him the right way. I also think that the fact that Jimmy, as big of a guy as he was, not being able to be anywhere close to an effective run blocker is just a narrative that is amazing. I mean, how are you 280 pounds rock solid and you can't, you know, block? I mean, that part of it is very hard to wrap your head around, but it just was something that he never was good at, and also not really having the willingness to do it, and the Seahawks kept trying to make him be that guy. So I think just all around, fair or unfair, I think Jimmy just wasn't the right fit here. And he had moments where he performed well, had glaring moments where it was a clear bad marriage between offensive philosophy and having a tight end like Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, I think he was mostly misused. I don't think you should have brought him in here and have him block as much as he did. If he was 6'3", and like 20 pounds lighter, whatever, he would have been a receiver. I think being a tight end, it was something you did at Miami because you took your final year of eligibility to join the football team. You're such a natural talent also that you were taken by the Saints. You excelled there with Drew Brees and then was just misused at times. And eventually they figured it out. And there were even games and years where he had less bright moments where he looked good. It's just that that offense at the time, especially Tom in 2015, am I thinking of the right year? It was, and that's partly because Jimmy Graham was out, but it was Wilson and Baldwin. And that was it. And that was the connection. And that was the driving force.
Feels like we've had a couple of those years now, right? I mean, here we are at the end of a year where we're without the starting running back, and it's Russell Wilson, and it's DK Metcalf, and it's Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the offense. That's the true offense right now.
Yeah.
At the end of that year, 2015, Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin. I mean, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah, we have. And I guess the nice thing to say, though, is that you just mentioned it was just Russell and Doug. Now you've got two guys mm-hmm. that are really standing out and are a problem for offenses, which allows you to be a little bit more dynamic. And it's not as easy to go into a game if you're the Green Bay Packers and say, okay, we just got to stop Doug Baldwin. We just got to stop Tyler Lockett. And that's a challenge in and of itself, but it's doable because you can shift your coverage to one player. Now that DK has really shown his ability to be that deep threat and to be that number one playmaking type receiver, it balances out defenses in terms of how the strategy in which they're going to approach this offense. So I really like that DK had that performance against Philly to really help out Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, you know, moving forward.
I want to take that back. It doesn't annoy me that they text each other.
I like that you've been thinking on it during the segment.
I was just thinking about how often do you guys text friends that you have that are out of town?
Like, not often. I'm actually really awful about that. Admittedly, yeah. Awful.
I think I have two friends that I do that, or maybe three, that I do that regularly with. Like, almost, not because we have to,
right?
But because it's just, that's just kind of the relationship you have.
Yeah, for me, it's very few. Very, very few. So,
you probably have a lot of friends.
Well,
I have a lot of friends too, Tom, just in case you were curious.
hey, Jake, do you have a lot of friends?
No, I definitely have a lot of friends.
You know, I'm one of those guys that family to me is my closest friends.
Yeah, so. I have a big family too.
Yeah, I have a huge family, so that's funny you say that because my family is even bigger, so that's weird.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, look, Pete Carroll, we talked about him earlier. Is this his best coaching job? I think it – look, when you get to the NFC Championship as opposed to losing a wild card game, even though that's just two more wins – those are like two monuments. That's like winning an extra five games.
It is. I think
when you get that far.
Yes. I think regardless of what happens on Sunday, this is one of his best coaching years. And I'm starting to side with you on maybe it is his best coaching year.
Yeah. By the way, when we say best coaching year, are we saying just in the NFL with the Seahawks or overall?
In the NFL with the Seahawks.
Okay. Not like during the Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart years?
No.
Okay. But this has been a unique challenge for him. And I look at this and say, look, I don't think the season is done for the Seahawks. I've said that all week. I think that they're going to continue to advance. And if that is the case, to me, there is no question that this season has been Pete Carroll's best coached performance in his entirety here in Seattle. I mean, the ability to overcome these injuries, to still find ways to win, and if they were able to go down into Lambeau Field and beat the Packers, I think that is huge. In just the indication of this team going to the NFC Championship. Not many people, if any really, maybe a small sliver of Seahawk faithful, really believe the fact that this group could have made it that far.
We'll make our picks tomorrow and we'll play our wacky game show.
Packers.
What's the sound effect that's going to fall?
Curtis is going to figure it out.
We'll see tomorrow.
You don't have to worry about that, Jake.
Yeah, don't worry about it, Jake. That's not your problem. Okay. You're just going to take the test.
710 ESPN Seattle.